Hello, this is Wendy's Coffee House, and I'm Wendy. My guest, William J. Hall, magician and author.
Donna didn't know she had this, but I had asked, I said, could we see pictures? Could we go back to any videos you have? You know, I wanted to see if there was a history. You know, if you captured, you know, it's her grandson, if she captured her grandson alluding to Ashwar or anything, and it was probably the first video she had when he was just tiny on a rocking horse pointing up at the ceiling, and it literally gave me chills when I heard him as, you know, three-year-old child try to say Ashwar and not quite be able to say it clearly. And all of, and you know, Don and I, you know, we looked at each other because she didn't know what he was saying at the time.
The book, The Haunted House Diaries, more than just hauntings in here. This is a little bit of everything, UFO, unexplained, time shifts. I don't have an updated website for William Hall. That's why the interview has been updated, in addition to dropping some of the songs that were part of it when I did this interview at KCMO Radio. So the story still stands, and Bill's books are available on Amazon. Another book to recommend is The World's Most Haunted House, The True Story of the Bridgeport Poltergeist on Lindley Street. Right now, we're starting with The Haunted House Diaries and my guest, Bill Hall.
This is a story that I think is so fascinating because it's ongoing. And you got involved in that, what, in 2005 or so?
Well, my dear friend Paulino has been involved in it since 2005. He brought me into it because it was in his kind of, he knew it was in my neck of the woods. And we became good friends. And he said, look, there's this area in Connecticut that's really a, you know, flap area. You know, it, meaning the area has a heightened level of paranormal activity. And he said, this farmhouse, you got to meet this family because, you know, the lady of the house kept a diary for 50 years since she was a teenager. And this stuff's been going on probably for hundreds of years. It was a great chance to see, and I think you said it during the introduction, you know, something that's live and active and not dangerous, because if it's something dangerous to the family, it becomes difficult to, you know, waltz in there and want to gain evidence and experience things. You know, people just want things gone. So this was a different kind of story. It wasn't a, there wasn't a lot of negative. There were things you can interpret as negative, let's put it that way. And there were some things that you can say, okay, that was a little negative. But by and large, it's more mysterious than anything negative or horrifying, although I think most people that were in Donna's shoes, the lady of the house, probably would have left the house immediately. But she grew up with this stuff, so she doesn't have a Western kind of, well, she does have a Western kind of thinking, because she kind of has a good blend of both. But unlike most of us, you know, she hears footsteps, she thinks, footsteps. Why am I? What are these footsteps again? What is this all about? You know, I've been experiencing this stuff as a child, and so she grew up with the paranormal. It was very normal to her. She thought everybody's house was like that, and it wasn't until she was sleeping over friends' houses that she realized how "quote unquote" clear they are.
Yeah,
it's funny because it's almost nobody has to teach you that kind of language. People who have these experiences tend to just come up with similar words, clean, clear, you know, silent, still, nobody yeah. else there. You know, they come up with these words, and that's really when she realized that, that this was, you know, more unique. Of course, you know, she knew that she wouldn't dare talk to, you know, friends yeah. and stuff about it, because it was just, you don't want to scare people off from your house either, but...
Well, and part of it, in reading the book and finding out some of the things, she knew it was okay because some people had the kind of response that tells you that they're familiar with this stuff too. And so she had at one point she meets somebody else who grew up in a haunted house, and I don't remember if he's the one who levitated on the couch when he stayed overnight. I think that's the guy, that he was on the couch and he woke up like 6 inches off the couch and said, oh yeah, I grew up in a haunted house.
Yeah. And you know, of course, that's the thing about, you know, the paranormal is, you know, and you realize this when you release a book or two on it, is that you think people are going to look like you're crazy, and instead the reaction you get is, oh, yes, you know, I've had this kind of experience myself, or somebody I know and trust and is close to me has had this experience. So, you know, the feeling that I walk away with, you know, far more widespread than we talk about. And it's only when you know you have someone who is going through it themselves, or is open to it, or that you can trust, that you would really share those kinds of things. And even family members, I know after my first book was released, would come up to me and say, you know what? You know, and these are people, I'm like, well, why didn't you ever tell me? And they'd say, Bill, come on.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're a magician. Why would I ever expect you to ever be open to it? I mean, nothing against you. It's just something you don't tell people unless you know it's a friendly environment, if you will, because it is really putting yourself out there. You know, if you're talking to somebody who's never had that kind of experience, you know, you don't want people to look at you like you're, you know, tinfoil hat person. So.
Well, the beauty of this book is you have several different types of experiences. It's not just the haunted house. And that in itself is fabulous, because she did her due diligence. She documented everything. And so you've got the years that she started. And I'm trying to go back to, what was it, 70s, 67. I'm looking in the book to make sure,
yeah,
I get the right.
Yeah, the 60s, when she was 13. She's in her 60s now. So
yeah, so she started there. And then you continue through present day, it gives you an idea that this isn't just a one-off. She can't make all this stuff up. This is how she's given you an idea of, this is what to expect if you encounter this kind of stuff in your environment, or if you know somebody who's talking about it. This stuff is, for the most part, the best thing we have to say it's legit.
Yeah, I mean, and flap areas are wonderful for that reason, if they're active. You know, and there's, of course, a number of them that I'm sure a lot of listeners might have heard of, Bridgeport Triangle, and of course the most famous, the Bermuda Triangle, and, mm-hmm. you know, things of that nature. Seeing the papers from throughout 50 years, you know, giant box, because she brought out a box when I first met her, and, you know, said, you know, Mr. Hall, I want you to realize I'm not making this up. I didn't just type it up and give you a binder. Here's the originals. And the box is, you know, inches and inches thick of, she just wrote on whatever paper she can find. You know, she went through everyday life. So it wasn't like a traditional diary. It was all neat and stuff. No, it was all different envelopes, all different pieces of paper, different writing, different, you know, dated, most of them, some not. But, you know, and so you look at this, you're like, well, you'd have to be clinically insane to, of course, make it up. But I already came into the case knowing it was legit, because Paul and Ben Eno were on the, you know, we're going there since 2005. So it was a wonderful experience for me, because unlike the due diligence, or, you know, are the people crazy, or they're mentally ill, or is there other factors at large, you know, what's going on here? I came into it with it knowing that this was legitimate, that it was active, and that it had a diary on top of it. It was really a neat find. And then to be able to go and bring in, you know, the right people and stay there, you know, do overnights and, you know, set up audio everywhere, set up cameras and monitors. It was just a dream laboratory for people who are interested in, you know, capturing this kind of phenomena and experiencing it for themselves. And that was the beauty of this area. Granted, there are people who live in the area, I'm sure they've never, ever had a paranormal, you know, experience in their life. And, you know, that's the way the paranormal is, right? I mean, but if you go in this house, in this farmhouse, and you set up shop and you stay long enough, you will experience something. It's kind of like you're guaranteed one-stop shop to the paranormal. And as Ben Eno said, you know, every time we go there, it's something different. So that's a, you know, the really neat thing about you know, this case.
And in the book, you talk about, I mean, there's some pictures in here of the Ashwar, the character Ashwar, who appears at one point. The little boy is saying it's his sister, and as the thing continues, it's not his sister, it's his friend. But this entity is a big mystery.
Yeah, of course, you know, with children and animals observing them, and, you know, we know dogs sometimes can get spooked for no reason, but, you know, when you look at the, you know, the timing and the context of, you know, the household dogs and, you know, their reaction to it. And then, when you add to it, of course, children who are talking in ways that are using words that they normally wouldn't use, and, you know, describing these situations like what Ash were, and the fact that Paul was able to capture this thing on video. And, you know, that's an amazing thing. And, you know, we've had people look at the video and nobody could really tell us what it is. And Mark D'Antonio, who's our resident buzzkill, I mean, he finds every reason why. Yeah, I mean, he finds every reason why, you know, this may not be paranormal kind of thing. But he shook his head at this, too. Like, you know, this is a good one.
And you're, as you're reading the book and you're thinking, okay, he's talking to something that would be more like another person. And the as you get more into it, you realize the images and that kind of stuff, there's like a serpent type. This is completely unexpected.
Yeah.
Like frightening unexpected. Or intimidating, to say the least.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it never appeared to, you know, be of any harm. And it was of a concern for the family. But, you know, the concern was tempered by the fact, obviously, of context, that they know that there's a lot going on in the place and that this stuff is real. And they realize that this is no imaginary friend based on, you know, his behavior. And, in fact, the first... Donna didn't know she had this, but I had asked, I said, could we see pictures? Could we go back to any videos you have? You know, I wanted to see if there was a history. You know, if you captured, you know, it's her grandson, if she captured her grandson alluding to Ashwar or anything. And it was probably the first video she had when he was just tiny on a rocking horse pointing up at the ceiling. And it literally gave me chills when I heard him, as you know, 3-year-old child, try to say Ashwar and not quite be able to say it clearly. And all of Don and I, you know, we looked at each other because she didn't know what he was saying at the time. And you know, now in retrospect, knowing he was later saying this thing was Ashwar,
mm-hmm.
and he was trying to say it then and pointing to the ceiling. And of course, we don't know if the word really is Ashwar. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, people say, did you know the spelling of this is actually a demon or this or that? Or, you know, the problem is none of this is reliable information as far as, you know, the name goes. So
right.
People say, did you research the name? So I didn't bother because I knew it was kind of a dead end and speculation at best. You know, the name could be made up. You know, when we're dealing with the paranormal, we really don't know, you know, when we get to names and stuff. You know, I did try to look for a car accident because the little girl said she was, she was in a car accident with her mother, and now she was stuck here to observe in the tree. You know, very strange things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then when you get this creature on film.
Like, whoa, that's not a little girl.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
whoops.
You know, right. You know, and as Paulino said, you know, the little girls in a blue dress, he said, they're never little girls in a blue dress. He said, they scare me. And I said, well, the big girls scare me, too. And, you know, we had a good laugh. But you know, that, he said, that's a totally different story, and I can't help you with that. You know, I said, yeah, we know more about the paranormal. But anyhow, but we found this guy in Florida who for, you know, at least two years was filming these things in his backyard. He really was trying to catch a vandal because things kept getting messed up. And he set up an infrared camera and ended up catching these little ashwars, these creatures that looked exactly like what Paul captured one night when Dale was out the window pointing to where Ashwar was in the tree. It was just pitch black outside. And so this guy from Florida had studied these things, and, you know, I mean, his opinion is they appear to be, you know, he tried to study their behavior and everything, and, you know, the way that they grow and shrink. He was convinced they had some sort of spacesuit on, to the best he could tell.
William J. Hall, Wendy's Coffee House.
This area has more than just ghosts.
I think probably one of the biggest advancements, and there's not a lot of advancements in the paranormal, but that would be one of the biggest, is all of us understanding that it's all connected somehow. At least they may all be different. You know, aliens and spirits and whatever, they all may be different, but they seem to be on the same bus or using the same modality.
The stories that you're hearing from the Haunted House Diaries are a blend of hauntings, you've got ghosts, as you were alluding to aliens in this last segment. there's a time shift element. They've seen in this house the manifestation of what looks like a young man who has contemporary clothing. And about the time that this, at least the way it's organized in the book, that this sighting happens, she coincidentally is driving down the road and sees this house. It's kind of a 70s, a contemporary house on a road that she's normally driven down and haven't noticed it before. So she sees it, and then there's another point when she drives and doesn't see the house. Did you connect anything with these two, or was that that's just the only, in terms of, you know, documentation on this particular incident?
I don't connect the house, the disappearing house, to really anything that they experience in the farmhouse, other than, of course, you know, it's a flap area, and we have, you know, the literature, there's a long history of these, that kind of thing happening. You know, there's people who have even talked to people outside, like of a farmhouse, and then, you know, later the whole thing, people, house and all, are not there. I try, you know, we always, of course, and I talk about this in the book, you know, we're, as Christopher Hitchens would say, pattern-seeking primates. You know, we look for patterns, we look for context. We hate not having answers. We have to have answers. If we don't have them, we'll make them up. And we'll convince ourselves that they're true. So it's very difficult to, you know, I really try hard to remain objective and not make connections. Like, you know, when we were at the house, there's a lantern that kind of swings back and forth on its own. And there's also multiple people that have, you know, seen and heard, you know, train outside the house, and there's no train there. And so some people would say, well, maybe the train going by the house is making the lantern go back and forth. You know, so that's the way we try to connect things. Personally, I think those things don't need, I mean, they could be, but they don't need to be connected at all. So that's kind of my long diatribe on, you know, connections.
it's a tough thing
because, and that's why, it was great to have Mark D'Antonio there, because he's not only an astrophysicist, not only somebody who is open to and believes and has experienced both the UFO phenomena as well as what people would call spirits, which he doesn't think are spirits of the dead. He goes more the quantum physics explanation, you know, being a scientist. But in any event, it's like, you know, he's the perfect blend. He's an incredible skeptic, which is healthy. You know, he believes that you need to prove it's paranormal, and paranormal should be your last explanation. And even when you're in a, this is the tricky part, even when you're in a place or an area that has paranormal activity, you still will be subject to the misinterpretations and the mistakes and the bad photos that are really just reflections. And, you know, so even if you're in a place that has this kind of history that Thomas House has, you're still going to get light reflections in your photos that are not phenomena. So, you know, you need people there to kind of level set your head. You know, me being a magician, it's my natural way of thinking, but now I'm here and I'm writing a book, right? I'm looking for evidence. So I have to make sure I don't find what I'm looking for just because I'm looking for it. I need to find it because it's real. It needs to be validated by others, and we need to eliminate other causes. So, you know, I'm no scientist, and certainly none of this stuff would equal the vigor of science, and I'm good with that. I don't want science to lower its standards for the paranormal. A lot of people say that. They'll say, I don't know why scientists don't believe this or don't, you know. I'm good with them not believing, because we can't lower our rigor of requirements for evidence just because we believe and know the paranormal is real. I think science will catch up and realize that. I mean, quantum physics already is, you know, Mark has pointed out numerous times, literally, and Paulino, literally would explain all of the paranormal. If one or two of the theories are true, then it would make sense. In other words, the multiple universes, which now most physicists agree there are multiple universes. So when we see spirits, are they spirits of the dead, or are they really, you know, parallel world intersect between these universes? And our UFO is nothing but traveling between these universes, and therefore propulsion and all the other stuff that we talk about doesn't make a bit of difference, because if you know how to transverse the multiverse, you can go anywhere without advanced spaceships, really. Maybe just advanced knowledge, maybe advanced, you know, who knows. So it gets very interesting when you go that route, but that's, you know, that's how we try to go about it, and I think the team we had assembled was good for that. I mean, Shane Searway he's the trifecta of the paranormal. He's grew up in a haunted house. He's had a near-death experience. He's a Native American shaman. So, like, when he walked in the house, he sensed about 7 or 8 things that he rattled off, and I saw Donna's face and, of course, my face, because I had read the diary. He had not read the diary. I didn't share it with him. And so he's the real deal. He's somebody that I don't need to look for evidence in, because I trust his what he says is unbelievable. I mean, we detected hollow ground when we were there in the backyard, and he detected the same hollow ground, but when he came, it was in December in the bitter cold winter, covered with snow, and I was like blown away. So I mean, plus he's a guy I know and trust. So, you know, when you get that kind of combination, you have an advantage that way. If he says he doesn't sense anything, well, then you know the place is not haunted, you know, because he'll sense it. He's the best, in my opinion. I don't know everybody, but he's the best in the business I've ever, encountered.
Bill, I want to switch the missing time on Burr Pond, and we don't have a whole lot of time to get into this, but this is also a fascinating part of this alien element that you included in the story.
Yes, yeah. And, yeah, the Burr Pond, which is within that flap area, that's Mark D'Antonio's childhood experience, the astrophysicist. I mean, he was going on a class trip and walked on the bus with his lunch in his hand, and like a second later in his mind, walked out holding the same bag of lunch with no memory of what happened during the day. And, you know, he didn't want to talk about it because he was kind of scared. He couldn't remember a single detail. And, you know, it's about 10 hours' time. So, you know, he kept it private. And he began that evening, his body shaking, and, you know, he seemed like he's having a seizure. And they rushed him to the hospital, and they ended up stabilizing him. And, you know, the doctor had asked what happened, and he said he fell on a dock out of Burr Pond. Of course, Burr Pond doesn't have any docks, for those who know in the area, but, you know. Later on, they put him on epilepsy medication, and he ended up stopping it because he didn't have epilepsy. And it was weird because he ended up, as an adult, they found a colloid cyst in his brain that needed to be removed, and they operated it. And then after that, he started having hearing voices, and he was having problems working because of all the voices, and he was seeing, you know, groups of people talking like there's a party going on, and, you know, he didn't know what. He thought he was going crazy, and he went back to doctors. He had MRIs and things of that nature, and, you know, even the doctor said, you know, what we did to you would not create, you know, hallucinations or that kind. You know, we didn't touch that part of the brain, you know. And, you know, he kept going back to the doctors, and he started remembering an experience about the experience that he woke up and realized he was having something implanted into his sinus.
His memories are fascinating, and the dog was present, and the dog's behavior changed as a result of this too. There's another element with the alien thing, the kids who go out and they go down a road and they see this crash site. Can you?
Oh, yes. And this gets into both the UFO phenomena as well, or potentially, as well as kind of the quantum physics multiverse time thing. Yeah, where they go on a drive and they know the road and they see a bunch of fire engines, like an accident scene, and it's not quite right. They can't put their finger on what it is. You know, the fire engines are the wrong color. The vehicles are like the police car is like a combination of somewhat modern, but, you know, one of the older kind of curvy hood trunks on it, and they're more engine hoods, I should say, and they have to get the attention of the police officer, who's not even looking at them, and, you know, acting like they're not even there, and finally says, turn around, but not even looking at them in the eyes. It's all of a very, very strange scene. There's like a huge fire in an open field and firemen going in there and everything. And so they turn around, try to go a different way. They're not having success. They end up on the same road about 10 minutes later, and the entire scene's gone. And it's so bizarre that it's a guy and his girl, the girl is bursting out crying, because it's so bizarre. It's, you know, not even able to really put it into words, but she's scared, crying. They go back to the house and retrace their steps. They're on the same road. But none of it made a lot of sense. The scene really, it looked like, basically looked like somebody was trying to interpret with a lot of, or some errors, an accident scene. And so when we look at this phenomena, you know, Mark D'Antonio brought up this is common in UFO phenomena, almost as to replace missing time with experiences recreated to the best of their ability, and sometimes they screw up as far as, you know, if you're going the alien route. Or, but either way, it's a fascinating phenomena occurrence in that flap area. And there's also a famous boy that is seen walking for many, many years on this Oak Avenue in Torrington. And so you have that kind of, those kinds of long-standing phenomena going on. But yeah, the disappearing emergency scene is just a fascinating story, you know, about the uniform not being right, about the lack of really interacting with the people. You know, usually you drive up to an accident scene, of course, an officer goes crazy and, you know, can't you see, back up, you know, all that, you know, and this guy wasn't even, they had to go out of their way to get him to even acknowledge them at all.
Okay, when you call a flap area, real quick, the overview for people who haven't heard that.
Yeah, that would be an area loosely defined, because there's no exact, of course, lines, or you don't cross a sidewalk and now it's no longer paranormal. It's a haunted world. But flap area is an area that has a heightened level of paranormal activity. And I would say, you know, Bermuda Triangle would be the most, you know, real or not, and I hear it's real, but would be the most common and most well-known kind of flap area.
For people who are just going to go to a normal place, there are areas, Weston, I think, is the closest one, that there are a lot of houses in that area that are haunted and report hauntings, that kind of activity. To me, that's like a flap, and it's ongoing. And Kansas City, in terms of having UFO experiences and UFO sightings and encounters, has sometimes experienced a flap, where this all of a sudden this activity increases and then it goes away. But during that time here, I've heard them refer to as, okay, we're experiencing a flap, which is an increased level of activity of a certain type, usually paranormal, UFO, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's about 83% of the time I heard it at UFO conference. When you have UFO activity, chances are you're also going to have other kinds of activity with it.
I can agree. Uh-huh. Having gone through it, yes, it's a whole kit and caboodle. Your website.
Right.
Your website.
Yeah, we used to think of it as separate silos, separate subjects, you know, but now I think probably one of the biggest advancements, and there's not a lot of advancements in the paranormal, but that would be one of the biggest, is all of us understanding that it's all connected somehow. At least they may all be different, you know, aliens and spirits and whatever. They all may be different, but they seem to be on the same bus or using the same modality, you know, electromagnetic energy or multiple universes or whatever. But they're using the same transportation, I guess, for lack of a better word, or the reason they show or that we experience them in our world. It does appear to be more than just isolated, separate subjects. You can't really talk about UFOs anymore without recognizing that paranormal activity within homes and in the area is also part of the phenomenon.
Again, the book, available on Amazon. There's a Q&A on Goodreads. The Haunted House Diaries, the true story of a quiet Connecticut town in the center of a paranormal mystery. Links are in the description for the show. Thanks for listening.